Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is where we're talking about mathemusics. And mathemusics explores how we can understand cell communication in terms of music. Because, of course, cell cycles are all about rhythms. Music is all about rhythms. And Henk Kooi, you've already explained a lot about the way we can understand music. And Kelvin, wonderful that you're here as well, because you've already explained how we can understand the fundamentals of nature in terms of quanta and how they link up and form patterns and connections and all that. And in tetrionics, the theory, the model that you came up with, there is a very strong pattern of 8 layers of energy which drives the whole atomic system. You've described that separately. And Henk, you've already described separately why octaves are so important in music. And earlier you already described that the octave, in fact, is a quite arbitrary division, just like how many colors of light are there in a spectrum. Likewise, you could say how many different notes are there between one note and its doubling.
Yes.
And today we'd like to see if it is possible to get a more general understanding of the octaves in music, to see if we can connect that to this concept of the 8 layers of energy which Kelvin so explicitly finds in tetrionics. So Henk, I'd like to ask you to just tell us about your ideas involved, and Kelvin, at some point you might have some ideas to connect up with that. I imagine that it might be most practical to get the story of music in place first, and then see how we can recognize that in tetrionics. Will that work for both of you?
Sure.
Likely.
Great, let's start. Henk, please give us a bit of a summary of what the role is of octaves in music and how musicians work with that.
Actually, musicians just work by it because these are natural laws like gravity. So it's all made by appointment. But the octave is a very genuine appointment, because it's a law of nature. And because we have this, let's say it easily, this 150 octaves we have as our known spectrum, from Koldev to universe to the Planckite, we can see all those keys. And if I come back to a discussion that we had last year about the Fokker organ, from the family of Anthony Fokker, who is also a relative of mine, they built an organ with 32 tones in an octave, or 31 actually, because the 32 is the next octave. And but they played along with it, and they put also 96 tones in an octave, and you could go ahead with this. So the more you go deeper, the more refined you go, the more tones you get in an octave. And these are not arbitrary laws; these are just laws of nature. But we decided that 96 tones in an octave is too complex for us to play with, and we are not accustomed to this natural attunement, because actually what it is, it's natural attunement. It's not a matter of taste. But we can't accept easily the natural attunement, because it's too complex. And our mind and our musicality likes to make it easier for us, so that it's easier to recognize. And as I was telling last time, and now I suddenly realized that I forgot to send it to you both, that the story of Walter Tooth with the electron spin on 27.8, the A tuned on that. So you have all those different qualities you can bring in. So if you have this A tuning on this specific pitch, you get a complete different way of acting of electron spins of all the other things that are involved. The neutrons are also affected by it. So it's just very refined stuff going on. But if you tune it on 427.9, then that doesn't happen anymore in that way. So it starts to happen in a different way. And that's exactly what I'm doing already for 26 years. Just with my voice, it's very easy to adapt and to tune into this very refined stuff. And it's so refined that I hardly know what I'm doing, but I sense it a little bit, or very strong. So sometimes I sense it a little bit, and sometimes I sense it very strong, so that I hit the nail with the hammer right on top. And but going back to this Fokker organ, made on 32 tones, they also produce music on it. You can also listen to it if you go to the let's see how it is called, because that might be interesting for us. It's from Christian Huygens Fokker. It's called the www.huygens, Greek Y, G-E-N-S, and then the streepje, Fokker.org. And there you can find everything about microtonality. And you can also listen to it. It's not very convenient music to listen to, I have to admit. And there you can also find this 96 keys, the 96 tones, tone piano. So that's one octave. So they put the whole piano together on one octave. So they played within the octave on the whole piano with this almost 8 octaves. Just to give you a little bit the mass from it, so you can imagine the piano, and then you have this whole octave in the piano. It's not a piano of 8 octaves anymore. It's just one piano with 8 octaves, and they put all those tones on a certain algorithm. No, I don't think it's an algorithm, but it's a microtonality thing. I have to study it to make it more clear. And this Huygens Fokker, maybe you know from Howard Huygens, Christian Huygens and his brother. They were also very famous Dutch musicians, and we all think in Holland that the Italians made this beautiful music, but actually they were mainly Dutch who went to Italy to make some money. So that's and then we realize, oh yeah, but these are Italian composers. No, Vivaldi was a real Italian composer. Well, he was not one cell of him was Dutch, but a lot of Italian composers were just the Dutchmen. Who went to make some money in Italy. So maybe Calvin also knows that Huygens was also a famous mathematician, and Constantine, his brother, made this first microscope, I believe.
They were into wave mechanics and prisms and a lot of theories of wave mechanical physics.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, sound vibrations. On the other hand, they looked at the laws of the oceans and clarity and communication. An interesting bunch of people.
Yeah.
To connect back to the octave. So, in a way, you're saying that the essence of the octave, the natural law, is that there is a doubling of the note.
Yeah.
And once you have the doubling of the note, then if you need to play with more instruments together, then you might run into some limitations. You already mentioned that our human voice has a much better capacity to play between notes than many of the musical instruments.
Yeah.
And that the choice of the amount of notes that you will have between the doubling of the what we call the octave doesn't necessarily have to be 8. It can be 5, it can be 32, it can be 96. And in an earlier talk, you have already explained that the 5-note system, the pentatonic scale, has been used throughout all of the cultures. But you also explained that by adding more notes, it was possible to have more refined connection between the various instruments that play together.
And
is there anything at that level where you can see that there is more than just an arbitrary choice of selecting 8 notes to play with? And of course, I'm looking for a possibility to see if there is a link between the 8 tones that were used in music and that quite rigorous level of 8 energy scales which is found in tetrionics. And I'm even wondering if perhaps it would be easier if, Kelvin, you could tell a bit more about your finding of these 8 scales of energies in tetrionics, the 8 energy levels which actually drive the electrons in the atoms and thereby determine all of the physicality in nature. Because perhaps with that in mind, Henk, you might find other ways to see how what music uses and what music knows and shows can be connected up to that.
Yeah.
Kelvin, would that work for you?
Yeah, sure. The, from a
how does that work in tetrionics, that there is these 8 levels?
Well, the easiest way to begin into this discussion is that tetrionics has a preference from the chemical side of things to divide into 8 energy levels, N1 to N8, which are all the, which gives us the atomic energy shells of Bohr's nucleus, of all the chemical elements. It gives us a total of 120 periodic elements, of which only 118 are suspected at the moment. I'm just looking for an illustration. Here it comes. I'll send it through. Mm-hmm. This one relates the chakra, which I think Otto's seen, to the 8 energy levels of tetrionics, as far as chemistry is concerned. But the other big thing to stress, just like music, as you've introduced me, how music can be divided into fifths or into 12 tones, etc., we can do the same thing with tetrionics. And in fact, each system has its geometric beauty, and it applies in different ways. Fifths, I'll send some more illustrations through as we talk, but the fifths come into play just as far as the hexagons, energy level, energy superpositioning for force, etc. The eighths, the octaves, come in when you're trying to relate it back to the 8 energy levels of chemistry. And then again, we can then do another one. I'm just looking for it as I talk, which is why I keep pausing. Which what I call equilateral harmonies, but it's basically 12 or 6 tones and semitones or quarter tones, etc. But it divides the equilateral triangle of energy up into equal amounts of energy equal amounts of tones, if you like, and that's the one I think really lends itself to this idea of doubling, as you were saying, because when you look at the circles on illustration 81.13, you can see that if you take the equilateral triangle to be an octave, surrounding that, within that equilateral triangle, you have a circle, an inscribed circle. So if you take that equilateral triangle to be a full octave, which can then be divided up, as you see there, into tones and semitones, or 12 equal amounts, all those sections are the same size. And then as you scale that circle from being either an inscribed or a circumscribed circle, you're effectively doubling or halving, depending which direction you're going. If you're going from the circumscribed to the inscribed, it's a half scale. You've halved it. If you go from the inscribed to the circumscribed, you're doubling it. So if you did, say, the inscribed, you could then draw a triangle inside that, and that would be a quarter the size of the original triangle. But all the scaling for your musical tones, for doubling from one octave to the other, would then all be represented, along with the semitones, the quarter tones, etc., and dividing it up into 12 equal tones within the octave would be represented in that one illustration. If you then want to turn around and say, how does that relate back to the energy levels within triangles? I'm just looking for an illustration that will give us that. Basically, what Tetrionics does is takes the 8 energy levels. That one's a bit complicated. Here we go. The 8 energy levels of the atomic nuclei, and each transition between N1 to N2 or N1 to N3 is a transition between a squared number. Each equilateral triangle, each equilateral triangle is a squared number of physics, but that squared number can also represent an octave. So this is just where my thought process is going, as to how we can bring it all together. So if you take the equilateral triangle, this is probably an even better illustration of what I'm about to say, if I can find the original. This next illustration is about fifths, but the important part is the triangles around it, not so much the fifths in the center. The fifths just show that we can divide up equilateral or hexagons in Tetrionics into fifths, just as per the musical notation. But the important stuff is on the outside, those four triangles with the energy, the horizontal energy levels. If you count up the triangles, if you treat that entire triangle as an octave, and then you have each octave is a squared number, for lack of a better way of explaining it, as per the colouring. So you have 1, then 4, then 9, then 16, 25 as you count down. You can then relate them back to notes as per the musical scales. And if you want to double it, all you do is you just draw a circle inside either an inscribed or a circumscribed circle within that triangle that's there, and then you just double it. You double the radius, which then makes the circle 4 times bigger, makes the triangle 4 times bigger, but it keeps it all to scale. So you still have that doubling. You can still then apply that original illustration of the equilateral harmonies, instead of the horizontal lines for the chemical spectral line transitions, apply the equilateral harmonies where we've got 6 semitones and 6 quarter tones, apply that to the triangle instead of the horizontal lines. So then it becomes a purely musical scale where the equilateral triangle is an octave, and then we can double it or we can reduce it, either way, just as the keyboard does. and we can divide that up, that any of those scaled equilateral triangles can be divided into six equal semitones, or six quarter tones, or we can divide all of them up into 12 equal tones, etc. So in a sense, as I'm getting more familiar with it, I'm seeing that tetrionics, just like music, can be chopped up in whichever way you want that suits, whether you use octaves or 12 tones, or whether you use musical fifths, makes no difference. We have a schema that allows us to do any of those arrangements. The octaves lend themselves particularly to chemistry because of the eight quantum levels. It ties back in with the chakra, as you can see there in the illustration. So obviously there's probably other musical work done by others that have tied the musical tones back into the chakra. So there's probably more work we can pull in on that direction. But there's also the option, as you say, to look at the equilateral triangle and see exactly how we can divide it up in many other patterns. I'll just find the last illustration. There's a lot of ways to fractionate, if that's the right word, a equilateral triangle. And if I can only find the illustration, when you do it, all of these patterns that I'll send through for the final part of my comment can then be applied to different musical scales. Here we go. Fractions illustration. This one here just shows how you can divide an equilateral triangle, and in this case, the equilateral triangle would be a single octave. If we wanted to double it, you just double, or you just scale it 200%, or reduce it 200%. But you can have divided into ninths, sixteenths, 27ths, any number, and you have an equal division within that equilateral triangle. So they can represent, you can have 18 notes within the octave, or 24 notes within the octave, etc. So there's a lot of ways that this simple geometry that tetrionics uses for energy can then be divided back up to match whatever we decide is the more appropriate scaling factor, I suppose, or the appropriate scales for the octave. I'm not even sure the right terminology, but however they divide those octaves up, we can do the same thing.
That's fascinating, Calvin, because you're now showing in a very fundamental way, from the point of view of tetrionics, how you relate the triangles to the circles. This is where the inscribed circle and the circumscribed circle are suddenly a very powerful way to see how this doubling takes place. And as you describe in between, in tetrionics, the whole notion of a next level of a triangle is that you basically add one triangle under the other, but then you need to go to fill up the row of triangles to make it to a larger size triangle, and then that way you can go from one scale to the next to the next. And in tetrionics, you always find that has to do with squares. And
that's so the big point, that squares are actually equilaterals.
Yes, and then you find that whole marvelous geometry in which squares and roots come in place, and squares and cubes actually come in place. But now, more importantly, in the connection to the music, you show how the circles, the inscribed and circumscribed circles, fall in place. And this is, Henk, where I would like to ask you to reflect on this, because what Calvin is showing here is a very fundamental representation of energy levels from the quantum perspective up, by which he has shown that all of the materials in nature are actually formed. And he's now showing that when you connect that with the perspective of the circles, then you can see how the different scales of triangles, which explain the whole fabric of tetrionics and physics and chemistry and cosmology and so on, is then also seen in terms of these cycles or circles or spheres, which is what we have been talking about for a long time already in this topic of mathemusics, and where you've described how music can be looked at in very many different ways. And can you first of all move a bit closer to the microphone so that we can hear you well, and then reflect on how what Calvin has shown here connects up to what you know in music?
I must say this is a very highbrow math for me, but the geometry I understand more, and what I see is, especially when you look to this fractionals and fractals, the story that you have within the octave, you have this also this 150 octave that we know. And so if you go smaller in nanos or whatever quantity, you will find the same things inside the octave as you find outside the octave. So that's also why they said in Indian music never go beyond the octave, because beyond the octave, that's for Brahma, and one shouldn't go there. Brahma is giving you the inside of the octave, and one should go there. That's from Hindu mythology and Hindu teaching. And since we belong to the barbarians of the world, so we said, well, why should we find it in the inside if we can also look at the outside? So it's the same thing. That's what I see also in this in these pictures. And so to give another example, what I'm looking for, or how it could relate. So we're now going to do likely some tests in Holland with specific pitches on how cells will respond with healing responses, but also the behavioral responses of cell divisions, and why would they go in this direction with this DNA stuff, and why are they going in another pitch, go to another level and put on different DNA going. And so we are going to do some research on that likely in the near future. Related to music, and this could be a wonderful way to explain also a little bit of what we will find, that if we have the math for it to explain it. And the funny thing is, as soon as we start doing some tests, we realize that we don't know music and we don't know math at all. So everybody is blind, because these fields of research show how is water responding to music, how are the cells responding to different tones of music, and how do they respond to different levels of the octaves. So if we double the octave or whatsoever, let's say in the 70s, from the last century, they were looking for this ultrasonic things. And now they are just taking this tone between 40 and 80 hertz, and sometimes 50 to 120, because that's where all our hormones are going. Okay. And so if we look at our hormone, our neurotransmitters, then they all respond to this. So the nice hormones, they respond between 72 and 112 hertz. And beyond that,
Hank, I'd like to just for people who are listening in on this, I'd like to give a little bit of a bridge, because you're very quickly making some jumps. between ideas of which you have expressed earlier, so I'd just like to illustrate them. When we were talking in the context of math and music about cell communication, cell cycles and atoms, frequencies, at that time we also saw how there are very explicit measurements on the frequencies of, for example, the hormones, and the measurements that these hormones frequencies can be measured at very precise places in the body, which the Indian and Chinese systems call the chakras. So you're now bringing all of that together. So in reflecting on the geometries of the triangles and the circles, which Kelvin has just discussed, you've just said that in music we find something similar, but when we are actually looking at the underlying topic, which we're talking about, mathemusics, which is the understanding of cell communication in our body and the integrity within that cell communication system, there you said that what music describes and how music describes it is in fact very limited. And then you show that these limitations become very important at the moment that you see that we're not just talking about the rhythms of cell cycles and not just at the frequencies of the atoms, which connect to what Kelvin just discussed, but that at the molecular level we are actually getting much closer connected in seeing how the hormones are frequencies, and that at that level we are indeed able to interpret everything that goes on in the body in terms of music and the harmonics of music. And that is where I'd like to ask you to come back to what you're trying to explain. Also, of course, within this understanding of how do octaves help to understand that?
Yeah, to understand it. So if you just go by this number that I gave you, so if you double, so let's say we have 50 hertz in our socket system. So and if we double that, we have 100 hertz, and 100 hertz is very convenient for our hormone, but 50 is not so convenient, but since it automatically doubles, we still have this benefit of the 100 hertz. But and if you then take this 60 hertz from the Americans that they have in their AC sockets in their homes, you see that they are much more in stress and much more in pain than the European with their Europeans with a 50 hertz cycle, because this 60 hertz produces, so 60 is not on the lower side in it. It starts with 72. This is the nice hormone for people. And it's 120 when we double it, so they're out of their nice hormones with their electricity, and that's a very important pulse that's everywhere in society. So that's also why you get some different behavior from Americans. And the funny thing is, when I came to America and I feel this kind of thing, I say, yeah, it's really different. So they're living in much less convenient, more in fear, more in stress related hormones. So I was thinking about why do they do that to themselves? Because it's just so easy to bring it to 50 hertz, and they will be more convenient, or even bring it up to 100 hertz, or let's say 75 hertz. It's just a way of getting things together, and we could affect the whole humanity with it by just putting another AC frequency in our electricity system. And you see, so that's a little bit of the part of the octave story. But then getting back to the math. Then I still have quite a bit of problem to understand the math behind it. I understand the geometry.
Hank, maybe I can
jump in there for a second, Hank.
Yeah,
I would say don't worry about the math so much.
Yeah.
A lot of Tetrionics illustrations are all about the geometry. If you're talking fifths, it's about dividing things equally into 1/5 slices. Same thing with the 12s, the 6s, etc. It's always about trying to get equal slices. And that's probably where the last illustration is important, because, as I said, we can work out what is the most appropriate or what is the most functional division of an octave to suit ourselves, and we can create a tessellation or a division pattern within that master equilateral triangle. So I wouldn't get caught up too much in the math, other than to say that, just like the piano, we're looking at equal divisions in whatever number we choose, and we can certainly do that.
And Hank, I was about to suggest that those divisions that Calvin just mentioned, you in a way already started to mention when you were talking about the hormones and the chakras. And the picture which Calvin has already put in, the people listening in have heard all the happy bleeps of new pictures arriving and coming across. One of them is about the chakras. And the chakra system, of course, has these 8 levels, which links to the octave philosophy. And if you look back in the history of the cultures, Roberto Renou has said that every culture can be identified by its basic philosophical number that it uses. And so there were times that the Greeks, for example, thought about 5 planets and 5 colors and 5 tastes and 5 senses and so on. And they also worked with 5 chakras. Now, we also know that there is a system of the 8 chakras and the 8 planets and the 8 colors and the 8 elements, spectrums, and so on. So even if they're arbitrary divisions, still in that chakra system, which has 8 levels, we can find a connection to the 8 steps in the octave. And Hank, you've already talked a bit about that, and I would like to ask you to just bring that idea back in the story, because we then have that connection which you already brought out earlier between the hormones, the chakras, and now connecting it to the picture that Calvin has already brought up about the chakras and the atomic systems.
Then going back to the vortex of the chakra, I made an illustration and I lost it somewhere, and that was that you have on every specific tone you have a specific vortex. So if you have the piano played, every tone produces a specific vortex with certain qualities, and one vortex will be accepted and doubled and will resonate with your chakra, and with somebody else another one will pop in his chakra and be received in his more electromagnetic shape. So we have this sound shape of the tone, but there's also an electromagnetic response in the music player if they're doing it well. So I once got a teaching from Reinbert de Leeuw, who's in Dutch a very famous composer, conductor, and he was very annoyed by playing on an untuned piano. How could they put him through this? And it was so bloody fascinated how this guy played on it. He played Ich grolle nicht von Schumann on it, and he played it even better than on a well-tuned piano because of his anger. It was not in shape. He put beautiful things to it in his anger, so he was really annoyed, but that created the beauty. So you couldn't even hear that the piano was out of tune. He produced so much let's call it silent sounds from his own body and mind. He knew how it should sound, and he played it like it should. and I heard it as he meant it, and I could not even hear that this piano was out of tune. And I said, can I hear it any more crazy? So if you would make a recording of it, you could hear that the piano was very much out of tune. I could not hear a thing that it was out of tune. But mechanically, really? and on a sound level, it was of course out of tune. So I said, how fascinating. So a music player is actually a producer of electromagnetic fields, and Ryan Delay also played this piece of music from John Cage, and that's 3 minutes and 57 seconds of silence, and it's also so depending on who's sitting behind the piano or who's the conductor of the orchestra, because you can also do it with an orchestra, play this piece of music, and then this orchestra is just producing this kind of electromagnetic vortexes towards themselves and towards the audience. And I said, yeah, but this is electron spin. This is not music anymore. But of course, it's music because it's silent music, and we have also this. When you read the musical scores, you have also this sign that you should have not pause but be silent. And in singing, we say, okay, that's a way to take an in-breath. But actually, it's not a way. It's not a moment of taking an in-breath. We use it as that moment, but to inhale. But actually, it is a moment of silence. So there is no music, there is no sound, and it's fascinating if you play music more along that way, because then it creates a completely different experience, and your hormones are really getting bewildered from it in a positive way. And so this thing of these vortexes produces on an electromagnetical field and also produced in sound. So there must be also something in the theory that you have that it's explaining the same thing as you were telling me once again or earlier when we were working with your voice, Calvin, and that you had a law for it. So you had this carrier wave law that brought it to a higher level.
Yeah.
And so that I was also fascinated. Yeah, okay, that's the explanation for it. And it would be wonderful to have also this kind of explanation for music, so that is people making music producing this kind of vortexes, and people with their positive or negative thinking, they also produce vortexes. If you're angry or you are in fear or you have this Ebola fear vortex getting around the world, and you name it, and it's there, and then you can make it with music a stronger or a not such a strong carry away. It's so fascinating to see how all those things get together in this theory, and how there are specific laws that they are how do you call it again? This in and out, going in and out of the Lemniscate figure, and so that you have this getting in and out of themselves and then the turning inside out. So I'm getting more and more puzzled by it by just telling you this on this.
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on that, Hank, because what you're talking about now is something which is very explicit in tetrionics, which is the difference between mass and matter. At the mass level, which is the energy level, which takes place in the time domain, it's all about frequencies, But that connects also to what you've been describing as a silent sound. So when it is immaterial, in a sense the frequencies are much more flexible, much more fluid, and tetrionics you can actually describe those layers of frequencies as the sizes of the triangles in the electromagnetic fields. While in a material realm, in tetrionics, there are very precise forms which are very rigid structures. So where you were talking about music having clear and defined notes with fixed frequencies, but you were also talking about the untuned piano, where suddenly you have to deal with the transition from one fixed frequency to another. That is where you then have to link to what you already referred to earlier, and what we have discussed in Mathemutics in previous recordings, where you were talking about Pythagoras and the notion of the vortex. That came also up in the comparison between the octave and the five-element cycle, or the pentatonic scale, because as you described it there, the doubling from one note to the higher harmonic is very precise, but when you go up the notes by the pentatonic scale, then you might find out that you have to tune at the level of the next octave. So in a way, you have to tune between the precise doubling of the note and the five notes in between when you play those.
Yeah.
And that again is where
this
you then
Pythagorean comma?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I was just about to say that. So that's well spotted.
Yes, sir.
It's exactly that where then Hank also said that Pythagorean comma is in fact serving as a vortex. And before we are already talking about the chakra system, and the chakra is a Sanskrit word which actually means a vortex or something that turns and twirls. The vortex is a much more precise translation of that. And we've already been talking about the chakra system as the relationship to the hormonal system with the fine-tuning of the organic functions within our body. So suddenly now we have a very much more precise transition between tetrionics and music in terms of not the octaves where we were looking at it before, but more precisely as the vortex system and the chakra system. And earlier I hinted that we might be able to find some closer links between the chakra system and the octave. But Hank, here, while you were talking about the untuned piano and the difference between the fixed notes and the need to keep on tuning the notes, is where we then have that transition which we would see as the fixed organ cycles, or the organ cycles that is retuning itself, just as in the change of health, but also in the change of consciousness. And that is also the power of Mathemusics, that we can describe what happens in the changes of health and what happens in changes of consciousness in the same terms. And
yeah,
we've already explored how well music may help us in that. But with the discussions now with Kelvin, and precisely with the pictures that you brought in today, Kelvin, we can make that much more precise and much more detailed, and explore how we can actually establish a much closer link between what you know, Hank, and music, what you've already described, Kelvin, in tetrionics. So while we are exploring these thoughts, we already get a much closer understanding of where the link is. And Hank, you're talking about the frequencies and the need to tune that actually really helps to show that we need to get out of this notion of, say, canned music with fixed frequencies into the art of making music and tuning emotions and feelings, tuning instruments, tuning communications, tuning the environment, which is what we have already discussed earlier, precisely what needs to be done in the dynamic of healing and also in the use of music for healing. So, Hank, maybe you can sort of hammer that in a bit more, because you've already talked about that earlier, but now in linking up what you've said then to what we are now exploring in relationship to tetrionics, this definitely does seem to all fall into place.
Then I need to add some more of this Pythagorean scale, like we have the Doric scale and the Aeolian scale and the Phrygian scale. And actually, it's quite easy to understand if you see that. So we have 8 basic scales, but then we have 12 tones, so we have also 11 scales. And they were all mentioned by Pythagoras, and we're still using them today. So every instrument is playing these scales. If you're not playing the Pythagorean scale, you're playing modern classical music. So that's the only music that's getting out of the scales of Pythagorean scales. They just are made to stay in, to keep it simple in color, that you stay more or less in a certain color. So let's say if you play in C, then you play in red, and if you play in orange. So we have those kinds of colors. I think the music
Hank, the practical point is the sound is now breaking down.
Yeah.
Try again.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Now I can hear you again.
Okay, but he's still going very very poor over here. So maybe we should start and is it working again? It's gone again.
Yeah. It's working again here.
It's working. It's clear again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming again. I think we have to restart a thing, if possible.
Okay, let's restart. No, to all of you. Just one more.
Right.
Just one more, please.